This interview is with Ashanti Alston, who is an ex-member of the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, and is currently active as an anarchist in the United States. Ashanti is speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair in Dublin this weekend. That's on March the 7th, so you can hear more from him there. You'll find more anarchist audio at the Workers' Solidarity Movement website. That's www.wsm.ie.
I'm Andrew Flood. I'm sitting here with Ashanti Alston, who's over speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair in Dublin. Ashanti, do you want to say a couple of words about yourself as an introduction?
My name is Ashanti Alston. As I said, I'm from Plainfield, New Jersey, but I've been living in New York for the last 20-something years. I'm a former member of the Black Panther Party. I was also a soldier in the Black Liberation Army and served a total of 14 years in prison. Since getting out in the mid to late 80s, I've been doing political prisoner work mainly, but also working with other folks as an anarchist, and especially with folks of color who identify as either anarchist or anti-authoritarian.
And so, but basically you're going to have a fairly general conversation. One of the things we're going to talk about is anarchism in North America. Last year I did a speaking tour around North America, went visited 44 cities, mm-hmm. And it's generally true that the European, or certainly at least the Anglo-English-speaking anarchist movement tends to be quite prejudiced against our North American comrades. We often have a pretty poor picture of them. And one of the interesting things I really got out of the tour was the realization that, in fact, you know, it's not a huge movement, but a lot of people are engaged in quite good concrete activity on the ground. Mm-hmm. They're not very good at actually reporting on what they're doing. One of the weaknesses, I think, is there's not much of an anarchist press, and there's not that much even for a tradition of writing up activity. So right. If you're trying to follow that from somewhere else, you tend not to see the kind of concrete work, and all you get is the often sillier ideological debates. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I came out of it feeling much more positive about what was happening in North America. I mean, you're living there and been around a while. You also do a fair bit of touring and speaking. What's your general impression of it?
Well, I think that, like, if we look at the Seattle 1999 with the actions against the World Trade Organization, that there has been a lot of anarchist activity. And I think that the activity has captured a lot of people's interest, you know, and like wanting to know more of what this anarchism is about. Because you see a lot of folks taking on more anarchist styles of activism from like what they was calling democracy in the streets. I mean, it was a big thing that if decisions had to be made in the heat of these kind of battles, that it was possible to make them right then and there on the spot. You know, and that was definitely the influence of anarchism. But I think people also were interested in how the decision-making processes within anarchism were pretty much worked out, because folks came from, if they had any organization experience, and I would assume that's political, social, even religious, it was always top down. But here the anarchists who were providing some models that were very inclusive. You know, like in the United States in the 50s with the civil rights movement, like Lorenzo Gamboa Irvin, he would talk about how a lot of the decision-making processes or the participation in the South was very anarchistic. It was called participatory democracy. And I think a lot of the things that is happening has been happening since the since like 99 up until now is that people want to be included, they want to feel included, they do not want some small group of people or some brainiac up top telling them, you know, what's the analysis, what's the program, and to be giving orders about what to do. So since I've been out, you know, I've been meeting so many people who are interested in how this anarchism works. But just like me, you know, they're reading. Many folks' interest was kind of sparked by going to Chiapas to check out the Zapatistas and actually over there meeting anarchists from different countries. You know, like myself, the first time I went there, I was already an anarchist, but it was so inspiring to meet anarchists from Italy, France, Ireland, Switzerland, and even from Spain as well. you know, and how we were all inspired by this struggle. But coming back, folks that didn't really have a lot of political experience, they wanted to know, one, why we were anarchists. But then the other is like, then what could they do once back in the United States to actually get involved in that kind of activism? So I get a chance to travel, and I get a chance to speak, and I go to conferences, and I am always meeting people who are involved in organizations or looking for something to join. What I'm really happy about is that the numbers of folks of color who are interested in anarchism is just, like, phenomenal, you know. And I think, which is one of the reasons why, at a certain point, I guess, in the early 2000s, a lot of us got together and we wanted a conference of anarchists of color, you know, for those of us who identified and for a whole bunch of other people who were just interested and at that point of looking for something different, you know. So even since then, I mean, like the anti-war activisms, the community gardenings that goes on in certain cities, a lot of the environmental movements, even like a lot of activism around earth and animal issues. You got folks involved from all different, you know, ethnicities and classes too. And I'm not saying that some of them are not without their problems, but it's clear that we're at a time in the United States, and I tend to think it's all over the world, where folks are more interested in forms of activism that have a high level of freedom, you know, have a high level of participation, and have a very low level of hierarchy. And if there is any hierarchy, they want to make sure that it is very temporary and it's gone as soon as it's not necessary anymore. You know, so I'm quite excited, quite excited. And there's many examples that I could talk about that keeps me motivated in terms of the growing anarchist movement. But like you said, I do think, too, that we lack ways to pool all these reports about what we do, what different groups do, because it tends to be very isolated, and a more central way of even having discussions around some of the more pressing issues that we might need to deal with, whether it's around racism, sexism, homophobia, how do we deal with this very postmodern reality that brings in an intersection of so many other different issues, race, class, gender lines. You know, it's like we need more of that to, like, bring us together into a more obvious, solid, even in-your-face movement.
I remember I saw you talk in Florida, very small town called Sarasota, which is kind of, I guess, somewhere in the middle of Florida on the coast,
right,
for people. There was a conference that had been put on there by some students at the new university. And I mean, part of the interesting thing I found about the going to Florida was, Miami was fascinating. I mean, when I was telling people I was doing the Northeast tour, mm-hmm. and I told them people had contacted me from Miami and were interested in going down, they were like, what the hell are you going to Miami for? It's, mm-hmm. you know, because the two political expectations of it or pictures of it were kind of the right-wing Cuban exiles,
right.
And also the extreme policing of the FTAA summit, I think, where the cops right. had kind of really got out of control.
Right. Right.
So I was like, whoa. and actually I found, you know, I'm coming from Ireland, so like basically, you know, you kind of know about New York, you know about Boston, you know about Chicago, you tend to know about the places where a lot of Irish people have emigrated to, obviously. But the rest of the US is kind of this empty space on the map.
Right.
So it was somewhere I wasn't familiar with. And the really positive thing was, you know, that there was actually an emerging movement there, and that people were already doing kind of lots of really kind of great stuff.
Right.
You know, I didn't hear about it till I got down there, but then I heard about it and was going, wow. And then even you'd get, you know, to other places in Florida that were fairly small towns. You know, I went to Lake Worth, I went to Sarasota, went up to Gainesville in northern Florida. And in all those places, there's people engaged in quite concrete activity.
Right.
The downside I found from the general trip was this thing that I'd be going through places, and because I was there, I'd be told about what was going on, and I'd get to the next town, and then I'd tell the people in the next town. They wouldn't have heard about it anyway,
right.
even if it was quite, you know,
right.
large scale often, or quite extraordinary.
Right.
Not true of everything. Some things were big enough that they made people's radar. Also that the, you know, the people in one place would not be terribly aware of who else there was just down the road.
Right.
You know, like there was very little contact between
right.
it. How do you think you could that's going to be overcome, that sort of thing?
I mean, I think it has to be with communication and networking. For example, New York is a perfect example. In New York, you've got different groups that do this amazing work and doing different projects in the community, from community gardening to babysitting work that, what's it called? Pachimama is like they provide child care services so that women, many who are from Latin America, that they hear they're immigrants, but they're trying to work, but there's no one to really take care of the kids. From Latin America and from the Caribbean islands, you know, but it's like you got groups that are providing these services, but the Pachimama group doesn't necessarily connect with the community gardening crew, or with there's a group in the Bronx called Casa Atabex, and it's a women of color organization that deals a lot with healing around women that have been victims of domestic violence, rape, you know, et cetera, who don't necessarily call themselves anarchists, but when you see how they operate, this is an anarchist group. Not hung up on the fact that they don't call them, that's great, you know. But do all these groups know each other? No. So, even for me, one of the things that I want to do is, like, at least get some time or create some space where folks can know each other. But even when that happens, we need to have some ways of communicating, so that people can, like, share the information on what they're doing, so they may even see the interconnections, which would help bring out ways that they can provide mutual aid, and then to be able to get that, the use of the internet, to be able to get that to cities and towns or whatever all over, so that folks can see that you're really not isolated. You know, when I met folks from Gainesville, it was the same thing. I mean, they're doing this work, but the folks in Sarasota may not know. You know, or when we had one anarchist people of color conference in North Carolina, here's all these amazing folks come in, and mainly from the South, doing different works, but they don't know each other. And there's always been one of the goals of the APOC conferences that we need to figure out some kind of formal way to not only stay in touch, but provide information, and also to see what ways that we can begin to pull these struggles together, bring them together into a real ongoing, powerful movement, you know. But it hasn't happened yet, you know, and I'm not quite sure why, because we definitely have the technology. We have people that know how to not just work the internet, but how to produce some really good literature, and even just, which I think we need to do more, pick up the phone, talk to each other, have face-to-face meetings, but it doesn't really happen. So I think our potential, for me, it's like I always see our potential is great, but we just work in isolation and we're not really thinking, like, how do we break out of isolation? A lot of it for me is just really simple. You know, communicate with each other. Do we need a newspaper? You know, do we need to have some of those, I don't know if it's Facebook, and I ain't that keen on all of that stuff. Yeah. Facebook and all the other stuff from the internet, to utilize the internet to stay in touch, but also to have a newspaper, something that we can actually have in our hands and go out to people so that they can, like, look at this paper and see all the different kinds of grassroots, community-based activism that's going on. You know, I think it would go a long way into helping to pull together people's energies and organize movements into something that really looks, you know, like something solid that people can, like, grab and utilize, instead of us just staying in our little niche, doing our thing, you know, great work, but it's not really going outside of that locale that you're at.
I guess one of the interesting things, actually, about APOC is that it's, in the last few years, it's been one of the few initiatives or ongoing things that's continental in scope. Like most of the other anarchist stuff that's going on, mm-hmm. hasn't been. I mean, I guess one small exception would be that Class Struggle Anarchist Conference in New York back in, mm-hmm. what was it, June this year or something. Mm-hmm. But do you think that the lack of that sort of initiative is a product of the weakness of local movements, as in that they're struggling enough to get their act together locally? So continental, whoa, that's just too big. Or is there more to it? But actually, one thing I'll say just for people in Ireland, because it's something we definitely don't appreciate, and I only appreciated it once I was over there, was just how vast distances are. You know, like, if you're going from, say, Vancouver to Miami, that's a 4-day, you know, 4 days of 24-hour traveling Greyhound trip, and Greyhound's an awful traveling way. You know, if you miss a bus connection, you might be stuck somewhere for 20 hours. I met people that had happened to. And it's also very expensive in terms of traveling. So there's kind of barriers there, you know, that we kind of, like in Ireland, longest car trip's about 8 hours, you know. So it's fairly easy for us to have national gatherings. We still have difficulties with it, but it's much easier. But would you say, like, it's more a question of kind of people needing perhaps to have much stronger local and regional organizations before something continental becomes possible, or could it work the other way around?
No, I mean, I think that there, right now, I think that the local things going on, there's some really solid things going on. I think there needs to be maybe some movements to, like, begin to connect them up. Maybe connect them up from citywide to statewide to regionwide and then continental. I when you were talking, it made me think about Love and Rage, you know, the potential of Love and Rage, because they was actually trying to develop a whole North American, you know, continental anarchist network, you know, and because there was folks that they had in from Canada to Mexico, you know, the folks in Mexico was highly involved with supporting the Zapatista struggle, you know, but they was like really connecting, and they were utilizing not only their newspaper, but the technology to try to pull this together. You know, so I think we have some models that we can look at, you know, but it's like, from what I see, everywhere I speak, you know, it's usually the anarchist groups that invite me, whether they're, sometimes they're student groups, a lot of times they're just local groups. And, for example, Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas, when they invited me there, they hooked it up for me to speak at the University of Kansas, but mainly it was for me to hang out with the anarchist group in the community, and they're doing this amazing work. They got a house that they live collectively. They got this food, not bombs, program going on that is really operating well in terms of feeding people in this city who were like homeless and hungry. They had educational programs going on. They were really solid and good, but it's like it needs to be hooked up. So it may just be like, we need to figure out some ways to, even in locale, do everybody know each other? You know, but just to get the idea out there and maybe get some kind of a scaffold of a vision where we can see that we can actually begin to connect with each other, you know, in real simple, basic mutual aid ways to begin to create even something continental. I don't think it's like really even abstract. I think it's with the technology that we have, it's a possibility. I think people need to, like, even to use anarchist conferences or other things, anti-authoritarian conferences, as ways to make the connections, make the commitment to take the connections to the next level so that we can figure out consistent ways to stay in touch, to help each other, and to begin to pool our resources.
You've been in Ireland a few days now. I guess I should ask you what your first impressions of things over here are.
Well, first impressions is that that comes from like a dream come true. I have always been wanting to come to Ireland, from the struggles that I have always felt very close to the National Geographic that gave me these wonderful pictures of the scenery. You know, that it's the moment I got off the plane is just like the hospitality that you know, I've gotten, the camaraderie. It's like it's been wonderful. And, like, I've been able to get around. And wherever I go in Dublin, it's like I'm getting a history lesson with everywhere I go. You know, from the struggles, the Republican struggles, the struggle for independence, to the castles and the landscapes and everything. So from Dublin to Cork to Galway, which I just came from today, you know, it's like I see this land. And it's like when I went to Puerto Rico for the first time last year. There's this beautiful land here that, man, what would it look like free? You know, and I'm speaking to and interacting with the anarchists who are like, they're working on this project now in terms of how to possibly make this strike turn into something revolutionary in terms of the consciousness of workers here, in terms of how they can seize this, their lives through this island and through their labor and their and, the, and their opposition to what these bosses and powerful corporate people are doing, you know. And I and the folks who I'm talking to are like, you can see that they're animated, really animated by this crisis, not by the suffering, but it's like from the demo that y'all just had the other day, where there was 120 people, you know, that came out in Dublin for this. You know, it showed so much potential for people's consciousness to move towards another level of activism where they begin to act on their own. And I'm like, well, wow, this is like really great. I think I came at a great time.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, we don't have 120,000 strong demonstrations. No. All the time. This is an extraordinary time.
But here's the other thing I found out by going to Cork and Galway. The 120 was Dublin. There were smaller things in other cities and towns. I'm like, oh, well, that's even greater. People are upset. People are frustrated. People are looking for some way out when they know, and a sense of them know that the people in power are going to put the burden on them. You know, they talk about democratizing the pain, you know, but as you know, like the rich folks ain't never going to take no pain. But that's always going to be the poor folks. But it's like I'm excited on how things are actually going to turn out for like March 30th. Mm. You know, even though I'll be back in the United States, it's like I want to be up on that news every day to see how things turn out. You know, and I like the fact that, you know, I come here and there's meetings, you know, and folks are talking about it. And the anarchists are bringing an analysis. You know, not even doing it in the old-fashioned, you know, ideological way of trying to drill something into people's heads, but just to be in a space where they can offer a different perspective and have a dialogue with other folks. I mean, like, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to go. It's supposed to be dialogue. It's supposed to be like, you know, it's all right even if it gets into a struggle, but that's how we do this. You know, we don't look to, like, be brainwashing people just to follow us, you know. So, I mean, like, being here now is like me seeing not only a beautiful island, but it's seeing people who, like, they want to turn this island into a land of freedom. You know, I'm like, wow, I need to be here. It's like when I went to Chiapas, it's like to watch people creating free space did a lot for me at a time where I was just burnt out and everything, you know. So, I mean, all over the United States, I see people struggling. And I've only been to Canada and Mexico, but even in Canada, I mean, the anarchists are really doing, got a lot of stuff going on in Canada. But in Mexico, you know, folks are fighting back, the indigenous folks, the workers, the students, all of that. And you know what's going on all the world. So I think that my hope for a better world and my optimism is based on some really concrete stuff, you know. And I feel, really, really feel like the anarchists, this is like a moment that we have not had, I guess, maybe since the Spanish Civil War, you know, and that's why we need to really, really do all that we can to take the fullest advantage of it. We used to say in the Panther Party, seize the time, you know, seize the moment, you know, this is, I think, our time. And this economic crisis being on a world scale means that all over the world, it seems like this is a time where we need to, like, really have so much confidence in who we are and what we're about, that we need to get out there and give it our best, because I think that we have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, in a way, this is, it's bigger than really, the, in my opinion, the time of Spain, because by the time the Spanish Revolution happened, the anarchist movement elsewhere had mostly been crushed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no matter how things turned out in Spain, you know, they were then going to find themselves against it. Now, nowadays, there's no movement that is anything like the strength of the movements in Spain at that period. Right. But what we do have now is a movement that's very much more global in scope.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, I spend a fair bit of time reading anarchist history. I think probably it's more global now than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that there seems to be, you know, those movements are small groups of people everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're not necessarily terribly visible, you know, like groups in Syria or the Lebanon or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, maybe these are only 8 or 9 people or 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also an influence of the ideas, you know. Mm-hmm. That there's a sort of the... there's much more of an influence of what are essentially anarchist ideas in terms of the, maybe the general population isn't the right word, but mm-hmm. like people that are interested in the struggle,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's much more of a kind of look at anti-authoritarian methods of organizing mm-hmm. of those ideas as a legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Zapatista thing is interesting. I was in Chiapas in 96 and right. again in 97, and
right.
like you, I mean, I found that completely inspiring. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, kind of this was the stuff actually happening. This was right. lots of ordinary people who right. really got themselves organized. Part of my trip there was I spent time in one of the occupied communities. They'd taken the land off the rancher, and they were meeting mm-hmm. every week in the church, and they kind mm-hmm. of arguing things out. I couldn't understand any of it. Mm-hmm. I have very little Spanish, and mm-hmm. a lot of it was through the local languages. But just watching the process was mm-hmm. was completely fascinating. And the other thing I was at was the Encuentro in 96, which, of course, was this international gathering,
right.
3,000 people from right. 43 countries.
Right.
And I think a lot of the kind of wave that emerged from, you know, it became visible, say, at the time of Seattle, or mm. I was in Prague the following year, was part of that background story to that, mm. was people meeting up down there, was mm. that exchange of ideas. I mean, I remember in Prague during the riots, just on the streets, I was running into people who I'd last seen down there. It was kind of, you know, bizarre, because it was completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, this urban context was completely different. So there's kind of been this wave, I think, going for the last decade. And now, you know, I agree completely. We're at this point where basically the capitalist system, which to an extent in the last decade could look like it was working for, you know, mm. not most people, but a lot of people, mm. particularly in Ireland, there was that mm. sense of boom, and it was sometimes hard making, you know, kind of basic arguments about, no, you know, there were flaws in this. All that is suddenly just blown away mm. here in the space of months. You know, it's completely turned around.
Mm.
I think I said it at the meeting you were at, I was up at my parents' house beforehand, mm-hmm. and my mm-hmm. parents were, you know, talking to me about revolution, and, mm-hmm. you know, what did I think about human nature, and could mm-hmm. people, you know, I used to have that argument with them when I was a teenager, you
right.
know, I haven't had it in 20 years, right. but, you right. know, suddenly they were the ones bringing all this up and talking about it, and, you know, there's just that level, those general conversations.
Yeah.
The problem I think we have as a movement is that we, you know, everywhere, we're pretty small, we're pretty disorganized, I think, if we're honest with ourselves. I mean, we have a basis for things. And suddenly this potential has opened up for having some really mass influence.
Right.
And how is that going to unroll for us? What's going right. to happen? I mean, an awful lot of it is going to be coming down to kind of individual and small group initiative and people mm-hmm. doing what they can and ideas being taken up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sort of idea of a general influence of anarchist or anti-authoritarian ideas in the mm-hmm. population, I think, is probably what's actually key.
Right.
Because it means when people look to organize stuff themselves, they're not necessarily going to go for old-style, top-down leadership models.
Right.
They're much more kind of open to horizontal things, and that has the potential for things to emerge from.
Right. And I think, too, but I think one of the things that is really exciting is the movements, groups, many based out of small communities and areas like with the... used to be a lot of attention on the UWA tribe, and there's another one in Latin America, not going to remember the name, but what I have found very exciting is a lot of indigenous nations within the United States and Canada too, is that you have movements amongst folks like them who are using non-hierarchical models, you know, and like they don't call their movements or their activism anarchism. They're not hostile to the term, and they may, like with others, just identify it as some European thing. But it's like they're there, you know, and for me it shows the diversity of anarchism, you know, that sometimes it comes out of formal practices and others it comes out of very indigenous practices, you know. And even when I started, I Google a lot, and so a lot of times even stuff coming out of Africa, people are fighting for survival. They're fighting near the borders, and they're ignoring the borders because they got to deal with survival and trade and everything. But it's their effort to ignore or go beyond the state and to reach back into their traditions where it was possible at one point to just trade with people and to help each other and to get what one needed from their labor, you know. And I'm like, well, damn, a lot of that is going on in Africa, you know. We don't necessarily hear about it, you know, or in parts of India and stuff like that. So for me, and even in Africa, there's people who are writing on the need for a different form of democracy. And it comes so close and it's so similar to anarchist face-to-face direct democracy. You know, I'm like, well, damn, this is, like, really great. This time period that we're in got a lot going on, you know. And so, it's, again, I just think it's like, how do we connect with all of these peoples, you know, because we got a lot to offer to each other. And I think it's like with the, you know, key for me is like when you hear about the Zapatistas, you hear that there was this Marxist, Leninist, Maoist group that had these highfalutin ideas, they're going to go to the mountains and organize the peasants. But when they get there, the peasants actually kind of sit them down and say, yo, wait a minute. You know, I may not even understand all that stuff you're saying, but let's sit down and talk because we have some things that we can probably teach you. Maybe we can learn from you too. You know, so that kind of humility that leaves us all open to, like, learning from each other. But what we have seemed to have in common is that we don't want nobody lording over us. You know, that we want we want to be respected, we want to feel respected, who we are, which involves the cultures too, and that each culture and each people also have mechanisms of making changes, of making critique, you know, so they may not all be formal, but they have their ways of doing it, you know. So for me, when I look at all of that, I'm like, wow, shit, you got those of us in the West who maybe are more formal in the way that we do things, but then you got those in other places who, they use other methods. But we all seem to be on the same page. But it goes back again. We really need some ways to connect. You know, some of that is going to probably be internet, but some places probably don't even know what internet is. They ain't got electricity. They ain't got plumbing. You know, but we're going to have to figure out a way to do it. You know. But in Western countries, okay, in Western countries, I think that we need to utilize everything we got. And some of that is internet. But I think we can't lose sight of that even those movements of the 60s, the 50s and 60s and before that we so embraced and are so motivated by, that was face-to-face. And that this thing is still a face-to-face necessity. All that other stuff should be secondary. You know, we got to see each other. That's what anarchism is about, face-to-face, direct. You know, and I think when we forget that and we get to just relying on that internet and all them technological things, we kind of lose what this is all about.
The end of part one of the interview. In part two, we go on to talk about the prison industrial complex in the US before returning again to the theme of the anarchist movement. That part two will be available shortly. As I said, you can also find additional audio files from the Workers' Solidarity Movement at www.wsm.ie. And if you're in Dublin this Saturday, 7th of March, come along to the Anarchist Book Fair and hear Ashanti speak. The Anarchist Book Fair will be in Liberty Hall, which is right on the quays, from about 10:30 in the morning.